The Baker Street Babes are pleased to announce the return of our annual charity ball, the daintiest thing in a dressing gown pajama party. Yes, that's right, a pajama party. Join a onesie-clad Arthur Conan Doyle and come in your finest Deerstalker jammies, dressing gowns, onesies, and fluffy stash slippers. This is open to all Sherlockians and their friends. The event includes a buffet dinner, cash bar, live music, fantastic prizes, and delightful entertainment. Hosted by William Gillette, the charity ball will once again take place at the Players Club, Thursday, January 14th at 8 p.m. Tickets for the event are available at daintiestpjparty.brownpapertickets.com. 100% of the proceeds will benefit the Disabled American Veterans Trust. They strive to provide physical and psychological support programs for the wounded and disabled veterans and their families. We are requesting if any of you fine citizens of the internet are inclined to clean out any Sherlockian-oriented closets or donate original pieces of art and crafts, we'd be thrilled and honored to accept the donations for our live and silent auctions. Shipping becomes very difficult during the holiday season, so if anyone has an item to contribute or a suggestion to make, we are all ears, and we'll promptly give you our mailing address or collect the object at a Sherlockian event in the NYC area.
The Baker Street Journal is a leading Sherlockian publication written by the readers for the readers. It contains both academic articles and light, fun reading for any sort of Sherlock Holmes enthusiast. If you are a fan of The Great Detective and the other works of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and you'd like to read new and exciting writings by Sherlockians, or even find information on how to get published in the journal, please visit their website, www.bakerstreetjournal.com.
Wessex Press, an imprint of Gasogene Books, is a premier publisher of books about Sherlock Holmes and his world. They are also our publishers. The One Fixed Point in a Changing Age, a new generation on Sherlock's Holmes, is a collection of essays written by online fans. It was edited by several of the Baker Street Babes and contains a foreword by Laurie R. King, the author of the Mary Russell series. If you'd like to know more about Wessex Press or our publication, please go to www.wessexpress.com.
Hello, lovely listeners. Curly here. Today we have a live and local episode for you with Ross K. Fode, the creator and star of No Place Like Holmes. It's a web series about Holmes and Watson who get displaced in modern-day London, but are still very much their Victorian selves. Our live and local series seeks to highlight and feature local Sherlockians and creative individuals who are creating fantastic things in the Holmesian world. Some may be well known and others you may be hearing about for the first time. If you'd like to nominate someone or a group to be featured on Live and Local, please feel free to contact us at info@bakersheetbabes.com.
Oh, they call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street Babes always leave the rest of them behind. Oh, so when Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two-to-one?
So we are upstairs at the National Theatre today for another Live and Local episode. We are here with Ross from No Place Like Holmes. Hi, Ross.
Hi there.
And Maria's also here with me.
Hi.
I'm Artie, if you can't tell from the accent. So yes, thanks for meeting with us. So the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to ask you four questions to make you an honorary Baker Street Babe.
All right.
You also need to tell me what your full name is, because that was a really rubbish introduction.
Yeah, it's K. Fode.
Okay, right. So we're here with Ross K. Fode, who does the wonderful web series No Place Like Holmes.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you some questions to make you an honorary Baker Street Babe.
Just what I've always wanted.
So the first question is, how did you first get into Sherlock Holmes?
How did I first get into Sherlock Holmes? I first got into Sherlock Holmes, I think I was about 9, when the first thing I actually read wasn't actually the canon. It was a pastiche. It was one specifically for children, about the Baker Street Irregulars.
Oh.
I was about 9 when I got it. I got it out from the school library. And something about it, Sherlock Holmes was barely in it. He appears like right at the end. But it's just about Baker Street Irregulars. But something about it really appealed to me. And from there, couple of years later, about 13, 14, then I remembered that book that I read, and I thought, I discovered the canon itself, and I thought I'd give it a go, and obviously it's kind of been a lifelong love affair ever since. And yeah, I mean, I'm really into, I love the Victorian era anyway, just everything about it just really appeals to me. It just all sort of fits together. That's really sort of how I got into it, yeah.
Okay, fabulous. Tell us more about that lifelong love story. What's your favourite adaptation in any medium,
any medium,
radio, television, whatever?
Undoubtedly, it would have to be Jeremy Brett, Granada series.
Yeah, we concur.
Very closely followed by Basil Rathbones. I love those. I know some people don't like the updating to wartime, but I just love the chemistry between Bruce and Basil. And very closely followed again by an obscure-ish one, the second series of the 60s BBC series with Douglas Wilmer.
Oh.
I like that one a lot.
I have yet to watch it because it's out on DVD now.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
I imported it quite a few years ago from America. I don't know why it took so long to get here, but something about it I really like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard many good things about it. okay, great. Who's your favourite character from the canon? If you could sort of take somebody out for a tea and conversation, who do you take and what do you talk about and why?
It would have to be Holmes himself. Yes, it should be a little surreal seeing him playing as well. but I guess stranger things have happened. Everything about him just fascinates me, and I agree so much with many of his philosophies, and I just love him. He's just brilliant. He's just the perfect mixture of blunt when he needs to be, and then he can just switch between being ridiculously polite and as appropriate. He's just the best literary character ever,
okay,
as far as I'm concerned.
Cool.
So yeah, it would be him. I'm sure he's got many an interesting story.
Uh-huh. yes, a lot of that Watson never wrote down.
Oh,
yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He'd probably be able to tell me the correct versions of what actually happened, less romanticised and actionful, as Watson probably exaggerated.
Yeah, he's also the only person who can probably tell you about the giant rat of Sumatra.
Just what I always wanted to know about
as well. Yeah, isn't that ready? Okay, great. That's a fabulous answer. And the last question, what's your favourite story from the canon?
Favourite story from the canon? This changes from time to time, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
But at the answer I will most often give is the Greek interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Mycroft Holmes is another one of my favourite characters, and even though we see him so briefly, I love the interaction between the brothers, and I just think he's a great character, and obviously, as we know, he's only appearing in two stories, but he is a massive part of the canon despite this, and I really enjoy that story.
Okay, very good. So, thank you very much. Congratulations, you are now an honorary Baker Street babe.
Brilliant.
Welcome to the group.
Thank you very much. It's an honour.
Excellent. Right. Okay, so we're here today to talk to you about your web series, No Place Like Holmes. Do you want to just quickly talk our listeners through what it is, basic premise, and how long you've been doing it and all that, and then Maria can take over
details.
And, yeah, go into the specifics.
Well, for those of you that don't know, No Place Like Holmes is a web series, runs on YouTube. It's written, directed, produced, edited, and stars myself. quite a one-man operation there. the very basic premise of it is really, it's about Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson in present day, but they are Victorians, and it's as a result of a demonic curse by Sir Hugo Baskerville, the original, original one who's mysteriously died, but didn't really. According to me.
Happens to people in the canons.
It's true. That's a loophole I'm willing to take. So Hugo Baskerville didn't die. He's obviously immortal. And he crosses Holmes and Watson. Not very happy with what they're up to. Demonic spell goes horribly wrong. They wind up in 2010. Obviously, they have absolutely no idea where they are, what they're doing. They just have no concept of modern-day life. And it kind of all starts from there. Holmes obviously only knows one thing, that's detecting, so he obviously has to return straight back to that. They manage to get a new housekeeper in Miss Blake, who is everything Holmes is not. She is, she's the most scatty-minded, celebrity-obsessed, shoes, shopping, everything like that is just Miss Blake through and through. She becomes their housekeeper. They rent rooms in hers. She's kind of the equivalent of Mrs. Hudson, but completely different person, personal characteristics. And really, it's about them. Well, it's got the traditional mysteries, as it were, of continuing to solve cases, but it also deals with Holmes and Watson trying to adapt to modern day life. At the same time, they obviously are trying to keep their secret a secret from absolutely everyone, because of the implications and intrusion that if people found out what happened to them would be huge, and so they are also constantly trying to keep it a secret from there's other people that would like to expose them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's the very basic premise of it.
Okay.
Like I said, it's been running since 2010. I've gone through two Watsons since the first one burnt out after a year. It's a common thing in Sherlock Holmes things. They often, I don't know what it is, they just, I don't know what we do with them, they just sort of go. And yeah, it's just been an absolute major part of my life in the past 5 years, and obviously the series itself obviously then evolved into many other things which I all put under the No Face Like Holmes brand.
Yeah.
Obviously from there it kind of became things like my video book reviews, it became hosting Howard Ostrom's Holmes and Watson autograph collection. If you've not seen that, it's on www.mplh.co.uk. It's basically a massive collection of, well, over 200 autographed Holmes and Watson actors. It's huge, and there's a lot of obscure ones on there, so I really recommend checking that out if you've not. So that's one of the things. Then it became the Diogenes documentaries, which is like a documentary adaption series that are based on Howard's essays, because we also post essays and articles there. And yeah, just great Sherlock Holmes debates. Some people might remember them from a couple of years back. I was involved in the sort of video production side of that. So yeah, it sort of became, it's primarily the web series, but now it's kind of a multimedia thing.
it's quite interesting that it sort of became, you know, such a huge thing, and that it's sort of branched out into this.
Yeah, that wasn't what I expected.
Yeah, but it's brilliant fun as well. I mean, and just looking at the videos, I mean, you know, I really love the first episode, like the Hunt for Baskervilles, where the curse happens, and they find themselves, you know, suddenly, I don't even know where, in a park. I guess somewhere, it must be somewhere around London, I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty much mostly filmed around southwest London, Kingston and Richmond mainly.
Yeah, so I really just enjoyed sort of the sentiment behind it, and then sort of the playfulness. But I imagine, I mean, just can you maybe detail how the process of making one episode, I mean, what kind of work goes in there? Because, I mean, we see, you know, the 40-minute episode, but I mean, I imagine it must be, you know, the whole process must take ages longer.
Yeah, it's... Obviously, like I mentioned earlier, I'm kind of the one-man band operation behind it. So, obviously, I am the sole writer of it. Writing the episodes is probably the easiest part for me, to be honest, because I just know the characters, I know my actors. I know I've got the long-term story arc all planned out. That's all fine. So, actually, writing episodes does not take me long. That's done within about a week or so to refine it and everything I want in there. Then, obviously, comes the hard part, which is probably getting actors together is probably the longest part of it for me. I tend to operate on a sort of day-by-day basis, where if I can get someone one day, and then maybe next week I can get someone one day, as opposed to just doing them as a block in one.
Yeah, okay.
It just would not work with my actors. So filming each episode, it tends to be split, say, for the standard 40-odd-minute episodes. It would normally be split between about 3 or 4 days, depending on how many camera and the actors. And once I got all that footage, then editing, again, is kind of... It depends, as well, on the complexity. I use a lot of green screen.
Yeah.
which some people may not know, because some people believe that dungeon that Madeline Chambers
uses totally is real.
Is, yes, that might sound strange. That might sound strange, but I did have one actor asking me, when do we get to go to the dungeon?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, we're kind of in it. I'm just going to put that on the wall, and then we'll be there. So yeah, I use a lot of green screen, and obviously that makes it a bit more complex in the editing process, which adds a lot to it. I really don't have a time frame I can give you of an exact thing, because I say the main factor that stops me getting them out quicker is probably just actors' availability.
Yeah.
So at the moment, tomorrow, Sunday, Monday, I'm finally working with Mike Archer, Watson, again. I've been trying to do for months to complete these episodes for the fifth series, and he's just simply not been available till now. So I've done practically everything else. It's just I haven't never released anything recently, just because I have no Watson parts done yet, so can't do that yet. So yeah, they can take anything between a month to 2 months, just really depending on actor availability. To be honest, that's my main problem I have.
Yeah, well, it's very impressive, and I do appreciate the special effects you have in there. I mean, they do have sort of a slightly 90s feel to them, but it's just beautiful to look at, because, you know, it's something so different from the feeling if you compare it to modern adaptation. Everything's, like, so polished, and, you know, it sort of almost looks like a cinema film, even if it's just a series. And yours, you know, it looks properly, it's, like, made with love, and it's handmade, and it's beautiful, and it's just, I really enjoy.
I think that is what people get. I don't pretend to be the world's greatest technical filmmaker. That's, you know, I'm just kind of an all-round, just give a bit of background. Starting on No Place to Come was the first time I properly did directing and editing. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I was always just acting and writing, because I used to be part of a double act with my best friend, doing sketches and live stand-up comedy. And we made videos for YouTube there as well, but he was always the editor, director, sort of thing. Mm. I was only a writer and actor. Doing No Place Like Home was literally the first time, first episode, the original pilot, that is literally the first time I did any editing or anything like that. So it's been a massive learning curve from here to now as to what I know and what I would have done differently, and which is why I actually did the remake of the first episode. There is the updated version that was made in 2014, where we kind of, Mike Archer and I went back and actually kind of used the excuse that Watson elaborated and made some things up. anything I didn't like in the first two episodes, I kind of brushed over as, this is just what Watson put it as, and then Holmes makes him rewrite it. And so that's why we redid the first two episodes, so... That's kind of like, those are the proper versions that Watson didn't elaborate on. So, even to the point where he failed to properly describe himself, which is why Watson looks completely different in the first series. That is just Watson's error.
So, beautiful.
Watson gave us that brilliant excuse. So,
yeah, I'm loving that. You mentioned that you worked as a comedian in a way. I mean, there's a lot of humour in the series as well. I mean, can you maybe comment on, because very often Holmes is, I mean, if you think of the Brett series, I mean, he does have, you know, there are humorous elements in it, definitely. But, I mean, usually adaptations tend to, you know, make Holmes this very somber, kind of, you know, larger-than-life, earnest person. So can you maybe comment on why...
He's ironic case or he's depressed. Yeah.
But very often, I mean, there's this lack of, you know... And I mean, I love that your Holmes is very, you know, he's sometimes, you know, he's very... snobbish sometimes, I mean, you know, the way that he's, I mean, the way he's talking to Watson. That's quite amazing.
I have a brilliant relationship with Mike on that. We've been looking through things. It's obvious they like each other, but at the same time, I very rarely have a nice thing to say to him. And he just sort of puts up with me. It's brilliant. But no, you're completely right. I would struggle to find a part where I am properly actually complimentary to him. Most of the time, I'm quite horrible, in a loving way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he just kind of knows what I'm like, and just you can just sort of see it in his face. That he's just like, he just sort of gets on with it. But yeah, I suppose, I like to think my Holmes is different to a lot of ones out there at the moment. He offers something slightly different. But yeah, thank you for that.
Well, and sort of, maybe talking about the character arc, that you sort of have in there. Mm. Can you maybe comment on, I mean, because it starts with the curse and it starts with sort of the time travel element, can you maybe comment on sort of where you went from the first series to now the fifth series that you're doing?
In terms of character development,
well, was it just something that happens because you sort of grow with it?
Some things happen. I mean, the basic plot elements are there. I know what happens. But occasionally things might happen that I never originally planned. It just happens as a case of actor chemistry,
mm-hmm.
or just how some actors get on, or one constant that has never really changed is Holmes's reluctance to adapt to technology. is he arrived in 2010, we're now in 2015, he's still not au fait with anything, really. And he refuses to be. That's why, you know, he still dresses as a Victorian.
Yeah.
He is, you know, despite Mr. Blake's attempts to convert him and Watson, it hasn't worked. He's just being stubborn as he is, so he will not adapt. He still thinks the old ways are best.
Mm-hmm.
And Watson's a little more open to it. And that's probably a character development point there. Watson, there's an on-off chemistry between Watson and Miss Blake.
Yeah.
In that he obviously fancies her, but she's completely clueless. but he's too much of a gentleman to sort of any act on it. But a lot of that does get explored in the fifth series a lot further. At the same time, obviously, Holmes has an absolute hate relationship with Madeline Chambers. The leader of the Red-Headed League. So called because she's red-headed, conveniently. obviously she has been trying to investigate him for the past couple of years, trying to find out exactly who he is, because she knows there's something fishy about him, but
yeah.
She can't lose her finger on it until she's been doing a lot of digging and obviously recently has a suspicion he's a Victorian, but she needs to confirm it, but that will be addressed in the fifth series.
no spoilers here.
Spoilers!
She just has proven away.
Their relationship takes an interesting turn in that through necessity of actually sort of needing each other in a strange way. I don't know if it's sacrilegious, but in a way, Chambers almost becomes the modern-day the woman.
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of rivalry, yet at the same time, mutual respect does grow kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and it's basically she almost becomes that. And at the same time, obviously, she is a descendant, very, very distant descendant of Moriarty. Great, 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 great. Wait, it's five times. grand niece. And so in a way, there's also that Moriarty bloodline in there. So in another way, that's why the rivalry exists.
Because mm-hmm.
It's like a modern-day Holmes versus Moriarty. It's
mm-hmm.
in the slightest way. So that's kind of something that has just sort of developed along the years. And going back from when they first met, you would not see them where they are now in
mm-hmm.
the series, what they're like with each other in this begrudging respect, whereas before it's more just pure hatred.
Yeah. Which I also like, in the way that, you know, like the first encounter, and it's almost like this cat and mouse game that's happening between
yeah.
them, and constantly sort of trying to get back at each other. That's kind of really beautiful.
Thank you.
What I also really like is the moment, and that is a slight spoiler, but where you're being injured, you're Holmes. You're being stabbed, and it's just, you know, this rather random, you know, in a back alley garage
yep.
kind of environment. But it's sort of, you know, that was the moment where I thought, okay, this, you know, this is going places, which very few Holmes adaptations actually, you know, go to have a proper, despite all the silliness that is sort of going on. I mean, that is something, you know, this potential, you know, major injury that Holmes is getting there. It's quite something. Can you maybe comment also on the I mean, you mentioned that you do have cases in the series. Can
mm-hmm.
you maybe comment on how far the canon is incorporated in the series?
In terms of canonicity, of which there is plenty for the... I'd say, if you're a very Sherlock Holmes fan, there's a lot of hidden things in there that you'll probably be able to pick up on. There's no real, like, direct sort of adaptations of cases generally. I mean, it's not like we've simply take Veiled Wager and say, let's just update this and make it this. What, in terms of canonicity, there is plenty, it's more in terms of maybe things I might say or things we might just refer to, or even little placements of objects. So, for example, bees feature quite prominently, either by characters saying it, or there might be like a bee figure, especially Holmes, beekeeping. So little subtle things like that sometimes there. Sometimes there's direct sort of very... Holmes is an expression that he uses... Obviously, you've heard of the term Scott getting away with something scot-free, like getting away with no sort of repercussions. Holmes occasionally uses the very cheesy line, getting away with something glorious scot-free. I put things like that in now and again. They'll go completely over the head of people, some people, but for the people that know what that is, they appreciate it. And I think that is one of the good things about the series, that... there's enough in there. You don't have to really know anything about Sherlock Holmes, per se, other than who he is. Most everyone knows who Sherlock Holmes is, really. He's a detective. He's got the doctor friend. You know, everyone knows that. And so that's kind of enough for you to sort of start with. But if you happen to know a lot more than that, then you will appreciate it a bit more.
Yeah.
With just some of the hidden things that are in there.
Yeah. It's really nice. How long do you think you're going to go with the series?
It's kind of a very long... It's partly... This one's hard to say. I mean, I've got a very long-term plan that... part of it will depend on a lot of actors and where it can go and how I will shape it with depending on who is staying, who's not staying, what will happen there. I mean, I've already got confirmation from the light. Tamsin Dunstone, who plays Miss Blake, has already said that she would happily do another 4 years of it. And Kelsey Williams, who's Madeline Chambers, again, she is someone who would probably be in it to like blow her out. Mike Archer would depend on he's a very busy guy. He's a very busy guy. And he is brilliant, so it's not surprising he's so busy.
So potentially you could go through another Watson.
That is obviously something that's crossed my mind of something, but I would do that with huge reluctance. I've been working with him for the past 4 years. I would not want to replace him.
Yeah.
If it came to him, a question of him being unavailable or something, I would be more keen on the idea of writing him out temporarily sort of thing, as opposed to getting rid of him.
Yeah.
As at this stage, it's too good a relationship between us, and it's a real life friendship anyway.
Yeah.
So just, I would not be looking to ever replace him. That's not something I have intention to do. So, in terms of the long-term goal, I really can't put a specific figure on it, because, like I said, it depends a lot on characters and who's staying, who's not. I have intentions... Yeah, originally, because the series started in 2010, that was just the same time as BBC Sherlock started.
Yeah.
And so, in a way, to me, I thought, as we were going on, and both series were obviously progressing, I did say to myself that, you know what, I'm going to go for one more year than whatever they do. When they end, I will carry on one more year, just because we started at the same time and I just want to be a little longer. But then obviously I read a press release by Mark Gatiss, possibly, or Stephen Moffat, saying that effectively they could plan to run it forever. Basically until Martin and Benedict say no more, but they probably won't. So, as I kind of promised myself that, it's kind of like, I have to, it's a personal thing to me, that I feel I have to keep doing that. So, in a way, I love doing it so much, and it's been, one of the greatest developmental tools for me as a writer, and just everything. I cannot get that experience elsewhere compared to what I've done here.
Yeah.
And what it's taught me in just people I've met from it and everything. So it's not something I would give up easily, just because of how much I've invested in it and just how much I love doing it. So I really don't have a specific sort of end at this point in time. I just see it just keep evolving depending on what the characters are. Or indeed, obviously, if we did do the two series of the spin-off, the Mary Morstan Mysteries, which focused on Mary Morstan. So, you know, potentially something like that could possibly happen if this was to come to an end. I could still see something happening in that MPLH universe.
Yeah.
Might not specifically be Holmes. There might be something else in there that I want to explore. It's endless possibilities, as far as I'm concerned, mm-hmm. To what could be developed or looked at. Not really a spoiler here, but in the fifth series, we do get a little bit of a flashback between what we get to meet Harry Watson, and we get to explore a little bit of his alcoholism. And as far as I know, you know, you two might know differently. As far as I know, I don't know of any adaption where Harry Watson's actually been seen.
I can't think of one
myself. Someone might be able to correct me on that, but as far as I know, I don't think he's been seen before.
No, is it only ever mentioned?
Yeah, it was only mentioned, really. So that's obviously something I picked up on, and that's going to be explored a little bit. And, you know, that might be something that could become something bigger somewhere down the line. It's just little things like that could happen. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just a question of evolution and adaption. I still see it existing in some form years down the line.
Yeah. And you have managed to now, you know, do more series than the BBC in that same time.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I suppose. Yeah. No, I imagine it's a slightly bigger scale of things to do than me, to be fair. But, yeah, in terms of volume, I can... And by comparison of budgets, I'm, you know, I'm sure we can put ourselves on par there. So.
How did you, like, come up with the idea of starting to make it? Because I know from our own experience, we were like, okay, let's just do this podcast and kind of see where it leads us. Mm. And I didn't really think we'd get past, I don't know, maybe 3-4 episodes, and then we'd all get bored of it. And here we are, 4 years down the line, still going strong.
You started in 2009?
2011.
11, all right.
Yeah.
May,
yes.
Wow. But yeah, so going back to my time as a comedian in Double Act, it kind of goes, the origins of it are in there, in that I came up with the very, very basic premise of No Place Like Holmes as a one-off sketch. It was only just like a 5-10 minute sketch with Holmes and Watson, indeed, Victorians in present day, and it was only supposed to be a very silly one-off sort of thing. But unfortunately, my Double Act partner and I split. His choice, not mine. But it was a good thing, really, because No Place Like Holmes would never happen. So, you know, I suppose I should thank you for that. But that was something I had written and we were going to do. But obviously, we split up before it could ever be filmed. So I really like this concept that I came up with. And when we did split up, I was so into this YouTube stuff, writing and acting and stuff. I knew I could not give it up. I knew I had to do something else along that same realm of what we were doing. And then I looked through some of the sketches and I looked at that one and I thought that is something that potentially could be developed a lot further. And it just sort of went from there that I suddenly thought this would be something that I went through a canon, looked at all the sort of possibilities that I could play with it, and, you know, Hand of Baskerville obviously came up as something to look at, and in there, it suddenly clicked when I reread it, the beginning part with where they mentioned Sir Hugo Baskerville. I just thought that's something that's not been tapped there. This guy that supposedly cries out to, you know, as the text says, he supposedly cries out to, you know, all the evil deities that he would willingly trade his soul if he could just catch up with that girl. And then that just kind of went,
That's exactly what happened.
That can be a thing. Why has no one done this? That little gem there is something I can take and just kind of slotted that in as the thing. As to why there would be a demonic possessed man with all these superpowers. And yeah, it just kind of all went from there. That's kind of the sort of origins of it. I've got one cameraman and got an old school friend to play Watson, Samuel. And it just kind of went from there. And there's obviously been a massive part of my life and ever since.
Well, congratulations on that.
Yeah,
it's amazing. And specifically, like, because it is like a one-man show kind of thing with other actors and all, but it's just, it's really, I mean, I think us, as the Babes and other Holmes fans, do appreciate that, you know, there's a lot of things out there, and then yours is one of those things that just, you know, keep Holmes somehow in our present. It's another adaptation.
Oh, well, I think that would always exist whether I was doing it or not. But, yeah, thank you.
No, but it's, like, brilliant that it's, you know, it's not something, you know, large scale, but it's something, you know, that's made with love and, you know, your own time, your own money, and...
I think that is what people do notice. You know, like I said, going back to you, I don't pretend to be the greatest technical filmmaker in the world. You know, as I said, one-man band thing, it's not large-scale at all. I do a lot of things single-handedly. But I think people get that, as you say, it's made with love for people that do it, are into it. You know, we make the best of what we can with what we have, and we just have a great time doing it, and I think people get that. And so, yeah, I think that's what some people might like about it. Well, I like about it anyway.
Definitely. So, dear listeners, if you have not yet seen any of the videos, so No Place Like Holmes is on YouTube, the entire series, or on the website, in little neat layouts, so you can watch them all if you want to. We hope that you enjoy them as much as we did.
Yes!
Thank you, Ross, so much for talking to us.
Absolutely. If this quotidian world has got you crying, want you to want